the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another Wednesday episode, the interview of the week. I'm here with my co-host, Len. My name is Joey. This show, as with all shows, brought to you by the mighty ShakePay. Best ways for Canadians to buy and sell, that you should never sell your Bitcoin. Great app, no withdrawal fees, no deposit fees. They cover your Bitcoin on-chain costs when you send out, which you should be doing all the time. They have shaking sats. You shake your phone every day. They throw you a couple of Satoshis, up to 1,000 per day after like 6 months of shaking, which really doesn't seem like, it seems like a long time, but it's not that long. And also, of course, the Shake Paid, where you can just have your CAD balance spends on the Satsback card covered in full by the Shake Pay team. It's free. Do all this stuff before they wise up, because I guarantee they're not going to give that money away forever. Today, we bring on great Canadian, great mustache, Steve Barber. He's the founder of Upstream Data. It's coming to us from parts unknown. Steve, are you in Alberta right now?
Yeah, I am in Calgary.
Nice. Okay. Welcome to the program. Thank you for your time today, my man. Let's jump right into it, since we got a lean 45 today with some scheduling stuff on my end. So tell us how you got into Bitcoin, first of all. And you know, you're quick to discuss your background in oil field engineering. How did you connect those dots? To me, knowing what I do about the oil and Bitcoin sort of synergy now, it's obvious, but when you started, it definitely wasn't. How'd you manage to do that?
Yeah, I got into Bitcoin in 2016, sort of fell down that rabbit hole, I guess. I think I found it on Reddit. Like, people were talking about the price going up on Reddit, and I'd heard about it back then, but I was like, well, what the hell is this stuff? And I had just quit my job, so I had a lot of downtime. And got into it. And with my own oil and gas background as an engineer, that's how I started a business, because the Bitcoin mining thing, using energy and the abundance of energy in the oil field, just made a lot of sense. And that's sort of how I got into it.
What I really want to dive into is Upstream Data. Let's talk a little bit more of this. How did you start it? Like, what's the history of this? Because I find it to be absolutely fascinating, this company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, like I said, I got into Bitcoin in 2016. And as soon as I, you know, when I find something interesting, like a lot, probably like you guys and a lot of your listeners, like, I go heavy into it. Like, I don't just lightly read it. I have to understand it in depth. So I found Bitcoin Talk, which was the original like forum, right? Satoshi's forum. And then I figured out what mining was and Bitcoin mining. And then I was going through the Bitcoin mining channels and Satoshi Talk and asking questions to people. And very quickly found out that it was very energy intensive, and no one, at least from what I could tell, was like doing it in the oil and gas industry. So I'm also the kind of person, like, the reason I quit my job at the oil company was because I'm very ambitious. Like, I want to go do something cool. And the oil company I was working for, they just didn't have an environment for that kind of thing, like to foster employees like that, that want to like go well beyond like what, you know, my job was. So I left them, not for Bitcoin, actually, for something else, but something like a different motivation. That's similar thing. I wanted to start a company in a different thing. And so I did that. And that's when I jumped down the rabbit hole of Bitcoin. And then I started Upstream Data because I couldn't find anyone doing what I wanted to see, which was mining Bitcoin in the oil field. So yeah, that was 2017, January 1st, I incorporated. So it was 2016, I was scheming. The first of 2017, I incorporated. By the end of that year, I had my first Bitcoin mine running on a oil well in Canada. It was an oil well with excess gas. And so, which was the whole point of the business, was to go after that excess gas. And yeah, it just sort of grew from there. I started tweeting about it. So I grew like a following online on Twitter. And because at the time, pretty much nobody was tweeting about that kind of thing. So I like, you know, people like original content. So I started getting followers, and I basically built my business like just Twitter, like shitposting and and building stuff and then selling stuff and then word of mouth. And like, it's still that way today, like 5 years later. I got a bigger following now. I got a staff with a following, and we just tweet and just like organically grow through social media.
Okay. So I think you're selling yourself a little short here. There's no way that the business is, you know, running on shit posting, though I do appreciate the shit posts. And you are, I would say I don't know if you're like 92 Dream Team shit post, but you've got some pretty good shit posts, I would say, Steve. I've been following you for some time. I've enjoyed the content.
And shit posts, like literally, I post just nonsense all the time. But
well, I mean, you're right now. I think straying from God's light a bit in your application to be a Ben. We'll talk a bit about that later and why that's a bad idea.
Sounds good.
In the interim here, you guys have a number of like not only extremely well functioning products, but aesthetically pleasing products. And you know, some of these are meant, like you mentioned, for industry. The thing that's got my attention in the last 6 months, though, is this box you keep tweeting about and tweeting videos of and tweeting pictures of and measuring the sound of and melting the snow with and all this other stuff. You got to tell me about this thing. This is the, in my view, and we have a lot of people on the show selling a lot of products, all stuff we like. But this thing, if I wasn't getting ready to move and like saving a bit of fiat to do so, I would buy one of these things in a heartbeat. Tell me about this black box that keeps on showing up on your feed. We're having a connection problem for the first time ever on the show. Can you hear me, Steve?
Oh no.
What's going on over there? There's too much mining going on. The bandwidth.
Interference is kind of causing him issues with it.
We'll wait for Steve's connection to resolve. And can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, I supposedly got the best internet you can get in Calgary. So I don't know what the hell. It looks like it's my end, though. I apologize for that.
No, it's all good, man. I just gave you a big lead up there to tell me about the black box, man. Yeah.
Yeah, the black box. Well, first of all, I appreciate you saying what you said there about aesthetically pleasing, on the products. I actually put a lot of time, into our products, and also not just making them function, but I want them to be beautiful. So like, I really like I'm very influenced by those guys on Twitter that talk about architecture that's, has lost its way and is ugly. So I really try to put a lot of symmetry in my product design. And so I have that in the black box product. I have that in our Hash Hut product and a lot of our products. So anyway, I very much appreciate that. So you're leading up to the black box. You cut out a lot because my internet, but you're asking what, like, what's it all about? Like, what's the point?
Yeah. I want to know how this thing has not captured the imagination of the entire space. There's a renaissance in home mining. Energy is cheap now. I know Ontario just introduced this new legislation that they're going to have the ultra low rates for energy overnight here for the foreseeable future. It seems to me this thing is like in the sweet spot for retail. So first of all, what is it? How'd you come up with it? And why is everyone not talking about this thing?
Everyone is talking about it, man. Come on. I'd like to think so, but no, we get a lot of love for it. So we were just in Miami, right, at the booth, had a booth there, and we had the black box running, and our booth was absolutely buzzing the whole time. We must have been one of the most busiest booths, like consistently, with just people swarming us. So I think like a lot of Bitcoiners do really like the idea. It seems like a lot of people still don't quite understand it. So I'll give you the frame of how it came to be. I design Bitcoin mines for a living. That's what I do. I have to design everything for our oil field, which is very harsh conditions, right? Like outdoors. And so we build in a lot of stuff. Like we'll put in control systems. We'll put in, weather rated, the whole enclosures for harsh weather. And I learned a lot over the years, like I've built a lot of mines that failed. I've probably built more variations of a Bitcoin mine than anyone on the planet, at least for like portable Bitcoin mining. I would pretty confidently say that. So I built like six or eight or more iterations in terms of completely different product ideas. And some of them failed and some of them succeeded. And the ones that succeeded are the ones we mainly sell today. The black box sort of came about. I had this concept in my head for probably a couple of years for like, I wanted a weatherproof box, a weatherproof enclosure, like a Bitcoin mine, that didn't need forced air. Like it passively cooled itself. I wanted it for home, like a scalable one for small scale mining. So like something that works at home or like at your shop or like in, you know, on a farm, because farmers have, generally speaking, subsidized energy rates. So I wanted to build something for that small scale miner where they didn't have to say, because once you get past like a few miners, you start to have a heat problem, right? You have to, like, let's say you're in your garage, right? If you even put one miner in your garage, you pretty much have to cut a hole in your wall and ventilate the heat. You got to put a fan in or a duct in or vent it out the window. So heat's not actually a good thing, right? Like people want to use the heat to offset their bill. But for me, like the vast majority of the market doesn't want the heat. They want to just reject the heat. So I wanted to build an outdoor box. Sound is also a problem. So I was like, well, how do you build a box that can sit outdoors, kill the sound, not be complicated? And I also wanted to design something that people could build themselves. So I sort of I think I sort of solved all those problems with the black box. So like, if you look at the design, it's on our website. If you go to our website, upstreamdata.ca, if you go to the frequently asked sections, frequently asked questions section, there's my guy, Econo Alchemist, wrote a guide on how to build your own. And I put out the drawings on how to build your own. So anyone listening can go build their own as simple as one sheet of plywood. Yes, so that drawing there is my design concept for it. That version he's built, he modified my original drawing, but like he built his own version. But my original drawing, you could take one 8x4 sheet of plywood, cut it to the right cuts as I sketched out, screw them together, and you literally have a black box. And you'd want to add some weatherproofing, and that's, you can see the cuts there. You might want to add some weatherproofing if you're going to put it outdoors, but if you want to build your own and just keep it in your house or indoors, you'll get a lot of sound kill just off that concept. And I don't know if you want me to get into the design, why it's the way it is, but it's built to be weatherproof, and I have mine running outdoors in Calgary all winter. So it passed the, you know, the snowstorm test and the cold test. And I put a lot of thought into it, actually. Like, it might not look like it, but I put a lot, like hours and hours of thought into it. Like, there's built-in heat recirculation. So if you're in a cold or humid environment, you can recirculate the heat. If you build it properly and you build it using right materials, you can build it to be weatherproof, like mine is, like the ones we sell. And yeah, it's just, it kills the sound. So it's, you know, that's one of the big problems with mining. And they just scream, like air-cooled miners scream due to the fans having to push so much air. So this, I think everyone at the conference, it was the first time the public seen the box in person, aside from me just like sending videos around. And based on the reaction I got, like we got, and there's a YouTube influencer that actually did a little piece on us we found yesterday. And he was blown away, like, by the fact that it was basically silent. He couldn't hear anything. But that was because the conference background was so loud. But it's really, it has a huge sound kill. So, like, it just saw, like, if you park it outdoors, you can basically start mining at home and have no problems with having to deal with a mine.
So talk to me a bit about the design. I am interested in hearing about the design. This is your brainchild. I think this has got to be, for my money, Steve, like, this has got to be one of the coolest things I've seen in my 4 or 5 years in the space. And I think it's, again, like we talked.
Oh, you're just saying that.
No, man, like for real, because we talk on the show all the time, and like our show has a lot of newbie Bitcoiners, or did when we started a year ago. And yeah, one of the things that we found, you know, really helped us when we started was the accessibility of stuff like podcasts. And so now there's a lot of podcasts like ours and a lot of YouTube channels. You know, obviously Marty and those guys do a good job summing up the issues, summing up a lot of the hardware stuff. All that's good stuff for new people. But on the side of like hardware mining specifically, it's difficult. It's so difficult for retail that there's literally companies like Compass who will do everything for you and take a cut. Like people would rather pay that cut than put something in their home because it wasn't an option before. So yeah, I want to hear about the design. How'd you come up with this thing? It's user-friendly. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. You know, I'm proud of the design, especially because of the amount of people I see building their own. Like, it makes me really happy and proud that I built something and designed something that the internet loves or likes. I won't say loves, but they like it. And it's gone, like, at least for our scale, like viral. Okay. I'll take you through the design. So like you got in that one picture there that you have displayed, that's all you need to build your own. You don't need anything else. You can just take that and add what you want to it or subtract what you don't want to it. The only thing it's not showing is the heat recirc, and that's in the part number C. You put a little, which is the column that holds up the platform that the computer stands on. You cut in a little vent register, like the kind of thing in your floor, right? Like to recirculate air. And you put one of those in, and then the hot side and the cold side can then be in contact with each other through that valve. But the way this works, so looking at it, like on the front face there under D, air goes in. Like, so the computer, although it's not showing here, the computer's sitting on that shelf in the middle, like that shelf D, that piece of wood D. And then air gets sucked in by the miner. The miner does all the airflow, like the miner itself, the fans on the miner create the vacuum on the intake. And then all you have to do, which isn't showing in this drawing, is put a pressure barrier between the over the miner so that the miner discharge side isn't in contact with the intake side. And so when you look at our videos and stuff, that shows all that. But it's a very easy thing. And so the miner pushes all the air. And the reason it's designed this way is because the being elevated on that platform D, when it's sitting outside, if any snow or rain gets in the intake or the discharge side and they're mirrored, so they're the same, then it sits on the floor, right? The water can't get into the computer. So that's number one, that the computer has to be elevated above the air intakes. The second part is the tortuous path. So once it comes in the filter, which isn't showing in this sketch, but the filter's on that front face where the air intake and discharge is. So when the air that comes through there, the cool air goes in the call it the cooling channel. And when you look at it side on, it's actually like an S channel. It looks like the letter S, and it's two S's almost like mirrored is what it looks like. And so as it comes in, it goes up this channel, like up towards the middle column, and then it reverses direction 180 degrees. So it has all these bends. So it comes in, comes up, comes back, goes up into the computer, and then the same thing on the way out. And so that's like my oil field experience. We build soundproof buildings for a living, like my company, actually the company I bought. And I already knew all that anyway, because I'm an engineer that designs this stuff. So the point is, like, the airflow changes any moisture that might be carried in on the air in case, like, it's windy or something. It should drop out on the floor. Like, it shouldn't be carried up, because direction changes cause particulate that are floating with the air to drop out. It creates little vortices and stuff like that. So it should drop out. That's part of the reason. The other reason of the flow path is for sound kill. The sound has to go through that tortuous S path. And that means all those sound waves are being absorbed by the surface, right? And so that's the combined reason. And then the third reason is sound kill, like call it pressure drop. So stuff falls out. And also that column in the middle that separates both sides, there's a heat recirc register supposed to be built into that. And then you can have the high pressure side feed back into the low pressure side. And so like in winter, I have mine open. So the heat on the discharge actually back feeds into the intake. And even though it's not automated, it's manually adjustable. So if you have, say, frost or blowing snow, block off your intake, the box will heat up and melt it. So it's self-regulating is how it works.
That's I want to talk like about legit. That's so legit.
Thanks, man.
I want to talk about who's actually using it. And I would imagine primarily it's residential users, because it looks like it's primarily that people are going to want to put it beside their home and do some home mining. But there has to be some people in industry that's also reaching out to you. I know that we had Brent Whitehead from Giga Energy on our show, and he and his partner, they reached out to you many, many years ago.
Yeah.
So there has to be people in industry also getting in touch with you for your expertise, but also trying to employ this in the field. Because the way I'm envisioning it, mining Bitcoin now, it's no longer just plugging it into the grid and tapping into the energy that's being provided by the grid. It's you have to find stranded sources of energy. So what you're providing, a very rugged and self-contained unit, works very well in that type of environment. So are there people in industry reaching out to you for these type of units and also tapping into your expertise?
Absolutely. I mean, it's built that version, the one that is built for mining at home, like the one where you build it out of a single sheet of plywood, that's the smallest version of it. The thing I didn't mention about it, because it's designed as a cross section, like there's no there's only two dimensions of the box. The third dimension is expansive. So you can linearly scale the box to any length. Like you could build that box a mile long if it was feasible, and you could put a mile worth of computers in it if you could, you know, distribute power. And if that was, you would never do that, but that's the way it is. So like we build that box into 8-foot sections, which is, so that means our core product line is anywhere from 2 miners to 12 in one box, or about 7 kilowatt to 40 kilowatt in one box. You could go further than that, but we're not going to go further than that because we just build more boxes instead of making it longer, because that's a good shipping dimension, like 8-foot. And we are getting inquiries like, so the root of that question is like, where is the mining market going? I personally believe it's going, and I actually talked about this in Miami, and I've talked about it briefly before. I see the market sort of segmenting in two directions. Like one is upstream. So upstream at the generating sites. So you got like sort of what we do for a living is oil and gas. That's literally upstream oil and gas. But I don't mean upstream oil and gas. When I say upstream, I mean upstream in the power infrastructure. So where is power generated? Power plants, hydro dams, solar farms, wind farms, oil and gas, natural gas, generating sites, coal, all that stuff, nuclear. I see the future, maybe not, you know, it's sort of trending that way, but like I would say in 20 years from now, most industrial Bitcoin mines will be behind the meter at the power source, because that's the best place for it. That's where the energy is cheapest. You have zero transmission infrastructure, like all the distribution lines, say, to the mine. And so you have least amount of infrastructure costs. You have least amount of energy loss in that transmission. So it fundamentally, I call that like efficiency is driving it upstream, but privacy, and this is how I articulated it on the panels I was on, privacy needs and regulatory censorship drives it downstream. Downstream, like you cannot hide a Bitcoin mine that's like a huge mine behind the grid at a coal plant. Like, I mean, you can try, but I mean, the inspectors, the regulators, the permit guys, they're going to know it's there. So there's no way to hide it. So there's no privacy, but you get peak energy efficiency. And so my company is sort of built towards catering to those people. And now the black box pushes us towards the downstream side, which is like you at home. You have the worst energy costs, like fundamentally you should, because you're downstream. Now that actually isn't necessarily true, because if things keep getting hairy, like they are in the markets, they might actually subsidize home energy users. Like you just mentioned, at the start of this, like they're talking about Ontario for EVs, and predictably, guess what's going to happen when they roll that out? People are going to plug in S9s and everything else.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. And it's awesome. Like, it's just a beautiful thing, because everything they do is just going to end up feeding Bitcoin miners no matter what they do. And so let's say, you know, there's a lot of worry in my industry and the industry in general that regulators are going to crush upstream miners. Like they're going to just slap in, you know, mining permits. you know, KYC stuff, like not don't mine on this pool because it has like tainted coins or whatever. And there's a lot of this worry in, at least in my circles, that this is coming. So that's why I see it as like you have, that's why there's a split. You have the privacy side of mining, which only works at small scale and distributed scale. And you have the high efficiency mining, which only works at large scale. And so we're sort of catering to both. And the black box is all about that, mainly the downstream privacy mining, not so much the upstream. Although it still works in the upstream. Like you can still put this in at an oil well. We're not really pushing it to oil wells because this box isn't the way we build it. It's less secure than the buildings we build. We build steel buildings with steel man doors, and it's a lot harder to break into that. The box, you could walk by with like a crowbar and get your way into that box, right? So it's more for a small scale.
So, you know, Steve, you're outspoken on the mining industry and, you know, energy in Canada. We have to talk about some of the stuff you've kind of touched on. The direction that legislation is going for miners in the country is, you know, I think a little troubling, worrisome, underinformed, let's say, to put it diplomatically, for most politicians. What are your views on what's next for energy legislation as it relates to mining? Because you mentioned there a couple of things, right? The incentive structure, for example, on cheap energy for home mining is going to lead to more miners and just more in general, you know, electricity intensive activities after hours. And the province, you know, over here is definitely going to have something to say about that if it gets out of control. What do you think is coming as far as legislation for Bitcoin in the future?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to think it's, you know, the regulators are going to get out of the way and like just let the market do its thing, but they don't tend to do that. So, I mean, it's fundamentally like Bitcoin, and I've talked about this a lot and written about it. Like fundamentally, Bitcoin defunds the state as it is, like in two ways. Like it prevents them from printing money. If the world switched to a Bitcoin standard, money printing goes away, right? And since we're Canadian, let's talk Canadian politics. The Canadian government is currently running off deficits. They don't actually balance their budget. They don't actually pay their bills. They print money to pay their bills. They don't actually raise taxes to pay their bills. They're spending beyond their means. So Bitcoin destroys that. Like Bitcoin does not allow that to happen if the money is like Bitcoin, right? Like, and that's why gold is similar. You can't print gold, right? You have to mine it. And that's the way it used to be. And that's why things used to be in many ways a lot more natural and better in the world. In normalizing for technology change, things were better in many ways on a gold standard. So Bitcoin, the government doesn't like that. Like they don't like the fact that they don't have a golden goose anymore. The politicians, what happens when they lose their golden goose is the politicians have to become accountable again. So Justin Trudeau, for example, or anyone in local government, they go blow the budget. They are going to be in shit, like with the people, because that means they took their tax money and wasted it, or didn't apply it properly. So when you think about it that way, and then also Bitcoin, because it's digital cash and it's not controlled by the government, and while it is surveilled by the government, they don't have full control over it. So it also makes taxation a lot harder, and not that it's not by any means impossible. It just becomes more costly to enforce. So Bitcoin does two things: it crushes the golden goose, which is the money printing machine, and it also makes taxation harder to enforce. So when you think about it that way, what are regulators and politicians going to do? They're going to try to stop it any way they can, and will they try to ban it? Will they try to like outlaw mining and outlaw Bitcoin? I sort of don't think they will, because I don't think they're a cohesive, you know, like Illuminati unit, like where it's all centrally planned. I think they're still, you know, elected officials with influence, and they're doing their best, but they just happen to be caught up in this fiat monetary system and sort of a slave to it. So I think what we should expect to see is regulations penalizing mining. So I'm expecting to see like mining permits, like mining specific taxes or tax penalties or specific rules on mining at certain scales. And the hardest one they're going to build to control will be the small scale mining. And how small that'll be is hard to say, because you can mine on a computer, obviously not feasibly. But the more they, and when I say computer, I mean like a desktop computer.
Right.
But the more they censor the market and make it more difficult, the more the hash rate goes up in value, because they throttle. They're basically, I'm implying, they're censoring hash rate. So the rest of the hash rate goes up in value. So then it brings these old computers back into the market again. So it's, yeah, I'm sort of rambling, but the point is, I do believe, I do expect to see regulation on mining, and we are seeing it already, and I'm seeing it in the oil field already. The Alberta Energy Regulator is already talking about rules specific to miners.
What are they up to over there? That's first I've heard of that. Because on one hand, I see these stories about Exxon rolling out pilot projects that involve Bitcoin mining. Yeah. And you're telling me that Alberta is thinking about penalizing it in the same month, 2 months. One of these things is not like the other. One of these things, obviously, we would all agree is, you know, backwards, incorrect, pick your term. What is the discussion like? Do you know?
It's hard to say, because it's not just the Alberta Energy Regulator talking about it. There's Ben from Bitfarms. I don't know if you know Ben. You should get him on your pod. Yeah, he's awesome. So if you talk to him, he would be worth updating, like getting back on for an update. He was telling me, since he's a bigger miner, I think he's more involved into the, call it the political side of things, whereas I sort of stray away. But I don't like talking to politicians, basically, or regulators. But Ben was telling me about Canada is potentially imposing, they're tabling it right now, a GST change for miners. So I think it has something to do with, if you import miners and you pay GST on it, you have no chance of getting that, reclaiming that GST as you would, because when you export, you can offset what you import. So there's stuff like that going on where miners are going to be selectively discriminated against. In Alberta, locally, I was talking to the Alberta Energy Regulator about a month and a half ago, and they were talking about making sure Bitcoin miners who are using associated gas, which traditionally had no royalty attached to it because it's waste, has to start paying royalties on it because it's a sale. And they're not wrong. That is sort of the way it should be, but they're retaining their exemption for combustion. And so what I mean by that is, as soon as the oil company on one hand invests in a Bitcoin mine and does something productive with their waste, they're penalized for it. And if they waste it in a flare stack and burn it and light it on fire, they're not penalized.
Literally light it on fire. That's the best part, man. It's the best part.
That's what scares me about the regulators, is because they're bureaucrats, and it's common sense and logic isn't their forte. It's more, they have other political forces forcing them to do and act certain ways. And so, when I talk to them and they're tabling this kind of thing, and the way the carbon tax is currently working out and penalizing miners while not penalizing burning gas, it's not good. There's regulators are here to fuck everything up.
Don't you think that the fact that Pierre Poilievre now is talking about Bitcoin and bringing this discussion more on a national level, once you hear about it, you can't unhear it. So now that we're talking about this on, in a political side of things, shouldn't this be a good thing in that now regulators will view it and find a way to try to incorporate it in our lives rather than try stopping it? Because the whole mining industry, there's a lot of money that can be made, and you don't want to just shut the doors, create extra barriers, and let them leave and find somewhere else to do business, because that's a lot of money and a lot of jobs that are just going to disappear.
Well, so
now that it's being talked about, it just seems logical now that they're talking about on a political side of things that they're going to somehow try to incorporate this in our lives. That's just my thoughts. What are you thinking on that?
Well, if politicians had the people's best interests at heart, truly, I think you're right, they would do this. But they actually only care about getting reelected. And so whatever ways the winds are blowing, you know, they'll bend that way. Quebec, you know, for reasons I could speculate on, killed their mining industry. Like,
go ahead, speculate if you want. I'm happy to hear.
Well, I mean, they killed their mining industry when they have abundant hydro that they weren't monetizing as much as they could. If they promoted the mining industry, they have a huge surplus. I don't know exactly why they would do that, but there's basically political corruption at every level, right? I think there's people getting paid off. I believe, I'm not sure. I don't want to jump down that rabbit hole. But I don't have a high view of Quebec politics, nor do I have Alberta politics, to be honest. I'm more, you know, pissed off at Quebec for not letting your pipelines go through. But there's a lot of politics at hand which do not help the Canadian people. You know, I just mentioned that, you know, Cross Canada pipeline. That objectively is insane. Like, there should be no one stopping these things, but they are. Why are they? Well, because they're politicians, and then who knows, right? Why they do what they do. But, you know, I'm really bullish on Pierre Poilievre. He was just in Calgary. I never made it out last night. He draws enormous crowds. He actually, for the first time in my life since I paid attention to politics, is actually a politician that isn't, doesn't sound like he just, you know, he sounds like he knows what he's talking about and he's not completely full of shit. So I'm hoping he gets in, but you know, that's a long road ahead, and what happens, I'm not sure. But I also don't think it matters. Like, I don't think, you know, the reason I keep investing Bitcoin and holding Bitcoin and building my business around Bitcoin. So I don't think it matters. Like, I think Bitcoin defunds these politicians. In the long run, I don't think there's anything they can do to stop it. And so, you know, they can really make my life miserable. They can ban my business, right? Like, but they can't really do that to Bitcoin, and for the whole world to coordinate and try to do that across the globe is just not, I don't think it's feasible. So I'm bullish on Bitcoin. I don't care what the politicians usher in. If Pierre disappears, I'd hate to see it, but I don't think he's the guy. I don't think he's needed for Bitcoin to succeed. I just hope he's there because I believe he's good for Canada, and I hope he does get in because it's good for Canadians. It's good for our economy.
What do you make of, you know, given your sort of position and proximity to oil and gas and your expertise, one question we've asked of a number of mining adjacent folks who've come on the program is, why aren't these guys all mining Bitcoin already? It seems to me that either Bitcoin miners are going to become energy companies or energy companies are going to become Bitcoin miners. And there's really no in between. What are these guys missing? What do you think?
Well, I think it's both. I know people that are Bitcoin miners becoming energy companies. I plan on being one of them. And I know lots of, we have tons of customers that are oil companies becoming Bitcoin companies. And so, one reason the oil and gas industry isn't picking this up as fast as I would like is they still aren't educated on Bitcoin. That's changing by the day. And that's why I go on podcasts like this, because you guys are educating them. There's going to be oil and gas people right now. I don't know if this is live or not. It looks like it's live. listening to this and listening to the post show. And that is what ends up orange pilling them. And from inside, they change the company's position. I've seen that many times. I've gone to companies, they don't want to do anything today, but a year later, they're a customer, right? So there's a lot of reasons though. Like the insurance industry, I've used this example a lot recently because it happened to us. The insurance industry doesn't like Bitcoin mining. They don't like Bitcoin, just like they didn't like cannabis. And they censor us. They make me pay way more than I should pay on insurance just to have a business. And one of our best customers pulled the plug on everything and sold all their equipment, and they're an oil company and they're mining their own coins and spending their own coins. And they pulled the plug on everything because their insurance underwriter, and they're a multi-billion dollar business, right? So their insurance underwriter basically said, you know what, if you keep mining Bitcoin, we're not having a business relationship anymore. So they were risking a huge relationship with an underwriter who underwrote their entire business. And think about the cost of changing underwriters and finding underwriters. It's not like, so they just pulled the plug, sold everything. So you still get that, right? Like if you're the CEO of an oil and gas company, especially if you're public facing, you really do have to think, you know, you might be the biggest Bitcoin bull in the world, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're just going to be like, yeah, I'm going to get into Bitcoin. You do have other considerations. But I think they are getting past the point where they were when I started, where they were worried about what their shareholders would think, where they're worried about what the public would think if they mined Bitcoin, because I think it's becoming a little more, call it, you know, well understood, right? It's not so much, you know, black market drug money as it was perceived a few years ago. So yeah, it's moving in the right direction.
I'd love to know who's the people that are contacting you. I would imagine primarily you're getting contacts from within people living in North America, but on a grander scale, is it more people that are reaching out from you from Russia, South America? I'd love to know.
Let's pry it out of metrics. Let's see how much we can get them to say on the show.
No, I'm curious.
Let's go.
How many secrets do you want me to reveal?
Oh man, it's an open show.
I'm an open book. Like I honestly don't keep much secret. Like the only thing I keep secret is if I have a new technology that I'm working on, I'll wait till I actually get it out there before I start talking about it. But everything else, I'm an open book. So yeah, like we've gotten calls, like especially, I mean, frig, like I've been out there talking about this for probably longer than anyone in the oil and gas industry, and the amount of people have contacted me over the years from every country, basically. The amount of, I just don't like, you know, when it's someone from another country, I usually say, hey, look, like we're focused on Canada and the US market. That's what we're good at. Everything else is a huge hassle. And honestly, the amount of time it takes just to get a deal done, I don't talk to them very much. And I say, hey, call this guy. I know this guy over there is doing it, or, you know, or I say, hey, do you want to license our products or something? But at the same time, you know, building Bitcoin mines isn't rocket science. It's to build them well is not easy, but like anyone can scrap a container together. My first build was a container I built with my bare hands, and I knew nothing. I got help, of course. Like it's not like it's not, you know, you still need to do some research, but I did all that and I got help. But I did also do most of the labor myself, aside from some fine stuff. So when you think about it that way, like the hard stuff is obviously computers, like building computers, like actually manufacturing them. So we're all buying from the same manufacturers, and the rest of it, applying those computers at your energy sites, as much as I want everyone to buy our stuff, like you don't need our stuff to do that. I do believe we have a really great product, better than pretty much anything on the market, but for people just to throw a container together just to get a little mind going, it's not, you know, a lot of people can do that.
That's friendly. That's, you know, that's the magic of the product, Steve. It's one of the reasons that I started paying attention to it. I think a lot of people are probably in that boat. Because of my poor scheduling, I have a physio appointment in 18 minutes. Len, do you want to ask any more questions on the actual topics that we usually discuss in our interviews, the things people love the most about the show?
I'd love to know if there's any incorporation of hydro liquid cooling in these black boxes. You're primarily using air to cool them, but is there a way to incorporate liquid cooling to make the miners even more efficient?
Yeah. Did you guys go to the Bitcoin 2022?
No.
I wish.
Okay. So there was a lot of immersion systems there. Like we were one of the mining booths, and in the mining section, there was probably like, there's only a few air-cooled people. We were one of them. And there's a lot of immersion and a couple hydro. So I've been a little outspoken against immersion. I won't say against immersion. I've been critical of immersion publicly. And I won't say critical. I said constructively critical. And people have asked me, why aren't we doing immersion mines? Because I haven't put vested any money into developing immersion system. So a couple things. One, I don't think it's hard enough for a home user to do air cooled, for them to get an immersion. It's just another level of complexity. And, you know, you're handling, fluids, like just handling the fluids alone. A lot of people don't want to do it. So that's one reason, like for the home market. I feel like I wanted to perfect our air cooled first before I because I don't, you know, we're not a huge company. I don't have like endless Fiat sugar daddies. Okay. So I have to be very sparing with how I allocate our resources and I focus on certain things. So that's one reason. The big reason though, is because I've been watching the manufacturers for years and what they're patenting. If you watch what a manufacturer patents, you can see what they're planning. So I've been watching Bitmain and MicroBT for a few years and what they've been patenting, they've patented a lot of stuff, but one thing they've been going heavy into is water cooling, hydro. So that S19 hydro is Bitmain's version that's now revealed. I've seen that for years though. I've seen what they've been doing cause I watched the patents. And it's a good move. Like if you're in technology or into manufacturing, you should be doing that. MicroBT has also been doing that, and they just revealed last week, although I've seen this for over a year, their hydro version. I'm personally investing in hydro and water cooling. So our next product, which is coming out probably in 2 to 3 months, will be a water mine for oil field. So I'm really excited about that. I've ordered it. I'm waiting on it to show up. And when it shows up, like everything, we're hoping to be pretty early to the market there. And that's one reason why I haven't bothered investing in immersion, because I think water cooling's better.
Joey, that's breaking news.
No shit. That's yeah, that's good. We got to put that in the show notes. Okay, Steve, you've been a great guest. Usually we finish the show with one question, which we'll get to, but in the spirit of this, you know, frontier chic that all you miners are operating with here, what's going on with the mustache? Why the mustache? Why do you view the mustache as critical to the mission? Talk to me about the upholstery you got there.
Thanks, man. I was hoping you'd bring it up. it's so, I mean, doesn't it look good, man? Like, come on. You gotta,
it does look
like,
good.
It fits me, right? It fits me. The mustache. Why did I start the mustache? Well, I like the Daniel Day-Lewis look in There Will Be Blood. I made a shirt called There Will Be Bitcoin, right? I wore that in Miami when I was on a panel. So if you guys can go check that out. But I'm an oil man, and actually in oil and gas, you're not allowed to have a beard in Canada. So I rocked mustaches for years, like off and on, like I'd have the mustache, I'd shave the mustache. Because you're not allowed to go to the field for a lot of oil companies if you have a beard, because it's a safety thing. It's bullshit. But actually, I shouldn't say that. It is really a safety thing in certain environments. But the blanket don't let you have beards. So I just sort of got into it, and I convinced the wife that she doesn't hate it now. So she's grown accustomed to it. So
when are you going to put the blueprints for how to convince my wife that the mustache is all right on the website? Is it like, are those blueprints coming up anytime soon? Or are you just going to stick with the box?
Well, here's what you got to do. You have to go past everyone that I know that talk about, oh, I wanted a mustache, but like I didn't grow it and yours is good. I'm like, well, actually mine sort of sucks. It took me 6 months for it to fill in. It takes a long
time. That's commitment.
Yeah. Oh, it took, shit. And I did it through COVID, right? So like I wasn't leaving the house, right? I was locked up. So
I love it.
You just have to have commitment though. Like Movember, you can't get a good mustache in the month of Movember. You got to go like 3 to 4 or 6 months, depending on.
Only Lanny McDonald could do that.
This is what I said. Like I tore my Achilles at the end of January, Steve. And I said, I'm going to grow a mustache until I can jog again. And I figured that'll be like at least 4 months. That'll give me time for the hair from the top to fill in the open space, you know, headed to the bottom. Yeah. And like, I gave up after like 4 weeks. It's itchy. My lips are always chapped. I fucking hated it. It's nothing good about it.
Yeah. It's my look now. So I'm going to keep it for at least solid. For a while.
It's solid. And
I'm also balding, dude. So like as I bald, as I bald, like, you know, I gotta like get something else going on, right? Like distract from the thinning. So
I've yet to hit that problem. I can't grow a mustache, so when I go bald, I'm fucked, I guess. Like I don't really have another option. Yeah. You're well, too bad for me. And finally, Steve, this kind of, it relates to a question that we led the show with, this whole Ben application thing, which I think is bogus. I think the only Ben worth being is Benjamin from Wayne's World, personally. But you know, I understand that you are close enough with good friend of the show, Ben Perrins.
Yes.
You guys are, you consider each other neighbors, I believe. And so,
We got to hang out. We were talking about that in Miami.
That's what I mean. Like, Bitcoiners are all over the place in Canada, and there's not much separating us. I know we're in Ontario, but eventually we'll have our own Bitcoin Miami somewhere nice in Canada in the summertime. For you and Ben, if you guys are in a parking lot, okay? Let's say you guys are in an asphalt parking lot. You're wearing your best pair of running shoes. Ben's wearing his best pair of running shoes. 40 yards away, there's a finish line. Can you beat what I would consider to be maybe the preeminent Canadian Ben? Can you beat him in a foot race, 40 yards?
No. I have a feeling he's fast. I'm a good athlete, but I was never been known for my speed. And I run like a deer. That's all what all my friends say. Like, I got long legs and I go like loping. So I'm not known for my speed. Ben would kick my ass.
Oh, man. That's not good. Hey, okay. So before we let you go.
I beat him in a fight. I thought you were going to say if we squared off in a parking lot.
It's a family show, man. I'd kick
his ass, man.
Do you want to give people a handoff where they can find Upstream, where they can find you on Twitter, all that stuff? Let them know, man.
Sure. Well, I'm on Twitter way too much. So if you want to find me on there, at SG Barber, BARBOUR, and at Upstream Data Inc. on Twitter as well. You can sort of find everything we do through those two channels.
That's it. That's all she wrote. Steve Barber, outstanding guest. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for watching. And we'll see you when we see you. Take care.
Thanks, guys.